to family, friends, strangers, and even you. The difference with Bob and Sarah is that they are broke and desperate, and no one knows it. Not only does no one know it, but everyone thinks the opposite is true. So when my counselor made suggestions to turn this bankruptcy looking for a place to happen around, there was more than one place of resistance in the heart. The truth is that Bob and Sarah are broke. They need to sell the cars and sell the house. Resistance of the heart is real. First, of course, we like our nice houses and nice cars, and selling them would be painful. Second, we don't want to admit to everyone we have impressed that we are fakes. Yes, when you buy a big pile of stuff with no money and lots of debt, you are a financial fake. Peer pressure is very, very powerful. We are scaling down. It is a painful statement to make to friends or family. We will have to pass on that trip or dinner because it's not in our budget. It is virtually impossible for some people to say. I would recommend that you have the largest nest egg possible because there are some really cool, non-greedy things to do with it later, like giving it away. If, when you run the calculations, you are afraid you won't make your goal by saving only 15%, keep in mind, this is just baby step 4. Later steps will allow you to accelerate your investing while still having a life. Would you dream with me for a moment? Dream that a 27-year-old couple with an average to below-average income commit to a total money makeover. They get gazelle intense, and in 3 years, by age 30, they are at step 4. They invest 15% of their income. The average household income in America is $40,816 per year, according to the Census Bureau. Joe and Susie Average would invest $6,000, 15% per year, or $500 per month. If you make $40,000 per year and have no payments except the house mortgage and live on a budget, can you invest $500 per month? Follow me here. If Joe and Susie invest $500 per month with no match into Roth IRAs from age 30 to age 70, they will have $5,882,386 tax-free. That is almost $6 million. What if I'm half wrong? What if you end up with only $3 million? What if I'm six times wrong? Sure beats the 97 out of 165-year-olds who can't write a check for $600. I would submit to you that Joe and Susie are well below average. They're losers. Why? In our example, they started at the average household income in America and in 40 years of work never got a raise. They saved 15% of income and never increased it by $1. There is no excuse to retire without financial dignity in the United States today. Most of you will have well over $2 million pass through your hands in your working lifetime. So do something about catching some of that money. Gail asked me one day if it was too late for her to start saving. Gail wasn't 27 like Joe and Susie. She was 57 years old. Life had dealt her some blows and had knocked most of the hope out of her. A total money makeover is not a magic show. You start where you are, and you do the steps. These steps work if you're 27 or 57, and they don't change. Would it have been better for Gail to start when she was 27 or even 47? Obviously. But once she's done with the pity party, she needs to start with baby step 1 and follow the total money makeover step by step to put herself in the best possible position. It is never too late to start. The past has passed. That's why they call it that. Start where you are, because that is your only option. Baby step 4 is not get rich quick. The investing you do systematically and consistently over time will make you wealthy. I think I see a smile broadening. You are going to win. Can you feel it? Can you see it? Your life is changing. This is fun. Now let's take another step.
Another total money makeover success story. What a financial and emotional mess I was in. I had a master's degree from the financial arena, and had over $150,000, yes, that is four zeros, in debt. I'm one of those broke finance professors Dave talks about. Hey, I had some really fun stuff, but I couldn't enjoy it because of all the debt it caused. I was really paying what Dave refers to as stupid tax, doing something stupid that costs you money. So I decided to make a change. I sold my motor coach and got on a written budget for the first time in my life. To make a long story short, I've worked my way out of $116,000 of the debt. I don't have as many toys now, but I have a lot of peace. I'm actually getting good at my budget, which provides a lot more hope and direction than my degree and toys did. If you've got an income, you need the Total Money Makeover. It will be the best thing you've done for yourself, your family, and your money. If I'd had this plan 40 years ago, I have no doubt that I'd be a millionaire today. Debt is not a tool. Camille, a school counselor.
Chapter 10, College Funding. Make sure the kids are fit, too. Time to do something about the ever-famous college fund. Many of you have been wringing your hands while we walked through four baby steps and have not saved so much as a dime for those little cherubs. Some people in our culture have lost their minds about college education. We need to examine our culture's value system on the college issue. We have sold our young people so hard and so long on college, and we have begun to accept some myths about college degrees. College degrees do not ensure jobs. College degrees certainly don't ensure success. College degrees do not ensure wealth. College degrees only prove that someone has successfully passed a series of tests. Because we have turned the college degree into some kind of genie in a bottle formula to help us magically win at life, we go to amazingly stupid extremes to get one. I have been a millionaire, starting with nothing, two times before I was 40. Being real takes tremendous courage. We like approval and we like respect. To wish for the admiration of others is normal. The problem is that this admiration can become a drug. Many of you are addicted to this drug, and the destruction to your wealth and financial well-being caused by your addiction is huge. Radical change in the quest for approval is required for a money breakthrough. Sarah's breakthrough came with family. Her family had always given Christmas gifts to every member, with 20 nieces and nephews and six sets of adults to buy for just on her side. The budget was ridiculous. Sarah's announcement at Thanksgiving that this year Christmas giving was going to be done with the drawing of names because she and Bob couldn't afford it was earth-shattering. Some of you are grinning as if this is no big deal. It was a huge deal in Sarah's family. Her mother and two of her sisters were furious. Very little thanks were given that Thanksgiving. But Sarah stood her ground and said no more. Sarah has a master's degree in sociology, so she is no pushover. She understood that she would lose approval, admiration, and respect. The courage to address what may seem like a small issue was a huge breakthrough for Sarah. That Thanksgiving, her heart had a total money makeover, and she was not going to be led into well-dressed poverty by peer pressure anymore. Everyone has a weak spot like Sarah's. It could be your third-generation failing business that needs to be closed. It could be your clothes shopping. It probably is your car. It could be the boat. Maybe yours is giving to your grown children. Unless you have had a heart-level total money makeover somewhere, sometime in your life, you are still doing something with money to impress others. And that has to change before you can get on a real plan to fiscal fitness. The Bible states godliness with contentment is great gain. Those of us who have had a total money makeover still know where our Achilles heel is and still see that weak spot as a fatal wound if we allow it to grow again. What is the one money thing that makes you grin inside when you see others admiring it? Do you need to give it up to break that feeling inside you? Until you recognize that weak area, you will always be prone to financial stupidity on that subject. My weak spot is cars. After starting with nothing and becoming a millionaire the first time by age 26, I needed a Jaguar. When a monkey would begin to climb the pole, the experimenters would knock him off with a blast of water from a fire hose. Each time a monkey would climb, off he would go, until all the monkeys had been knocked off repeatedly, thus learning that the climb was hopeless. The experimenters then observed that the other primates would pull down any monkey trying to climb. They replaced a single monkey with one who didn't know the system. As soon as the new guy tried to climb, the others would pull him down and punish him for trying. One by one, each monkey was replaced and the scene repeated until there were no monkeys left in the room that had actually experienced the fire hose. Still, none of the new guys were allowed to climb. The other monkeys pulled them down. Not one monkey in the room knew why, but none were allowed to get the bananas. We aren't monkeys, but sometimes we exhibit behavior that seems rather chimp-like. We don't even know why. We just know the debt is needed to win. So when a loved one decides to get a total money makeover, we laugh, get angry, and pull him down. We Americans are like the last set of monkeys. I want to expose the inner workings of the debt myth by looking at many of the sub-myths. However, I need to warn you to watch out for your instinct to defend the American way of borrowing. Calm down, relax, and go for a ride with me for a few minutes. I might be on to something. If at the end of this myth-busting section you conclude I'm just a nut with an audiobook, you will not be forced to change. Myth: debt is a tool and should be used to create prosperity. Truth: debt adds considerable risk, most often doesn't bring prosperity, and isn't used by wealthy people nearly as much as we are led to believe. I remember when training for my first career in real estate being told that debt was a tool. Debt is like a fulcrum and lever, allowing us to lift what we otherwise could not. We can buy a home, a car, start a business, or go out to eat and not be bothered with having to wait and save money. The myth has been sold that we should use OPM, other people's money, to prosper. The academic garbage is spread really thick on this issue. My contention is that debt brings on enough risk to offset any advantage that could be gained through leverage of debt. Given time, a lifetime, risk will destroy the perceived returns purported by the myth-sayers. I once was a myth-sayer myself, but life and God had some lessons to teach me. Only after losing everything I owned and finding myself bankrupt did I think that risk should be factored in. Life hit me hard enough to get my attention and teach me about risk. And I attribute 15% of that to college knowledge and 0% to the degree. The book Emotional Intelligence reported a similar finding. In studying successful people, the author discovered that 15% of success could be attributed to training and education, while 85% was attributed to attitude, perseverance, diligence, and vision. College is important, very important, but it is not the answer to all your kids' problems. I will be so bold as to say college isn't even a need. It is a luxury. This luxury is one of the first on my list. But not before retirement, not before an emergency fund, and certainly not as a reason to go into debt. Do some research on the cost of attending college. In some areas of study, and in a very few careers, where you graduate from will matter, but in most it won't. Pedigree means less and less in our culture today. How can you justify going into debt $75,000 for a degree when you could have gone to a state school and paid for it out of your pocket debt-free? You can't. The first rule of college is pay cash. The second rule is If you have the cash or the scholarship, go. A couple of years ago, I met with the dean of the College of Business from the university where I graduated. At that time, the average college student graduated with about $15,000 in student loan debt after spending 3 of 4 years in an apartment, not the dorm, and eating off campus, not on the meal plan. The average student paid $5,000 more per year to live and eat off campus than to live in the dorm and eat cafeteria food. The student loans that they had to have or they wouldn't be able to go to college weren't for college at all. The student loans on average paid for an off-campus standard of living, and no debt was needed to get the degree, only to look good while getting the degree. Student loans are a cancer. We have spread the myth that you can't be a student without a loan. Not true. If you've planned your savings goals and don't have much room in the budget for college, don't panic. In past generations, students lived with relatives, slept in dorms, ate cafeteria food, worked, and endured other hardships to get a degree. Now, after harping on mindset, we can set some reasonable, attainable goals for saving for college. Baby step 5, save for college. Virtually everyone thinks saving for college is important. However, hardly anyone saves for their kids' college education. Money Magazine and CBS MarketWatch both quote the alarming statistic that 39% of Americans with kids don't save a dime toward college. According to Proverbs 22:7, the rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. I was confronted with this scripture and had to make a conscious decision of who was right, my broke finance professor who taught me that debt was a tool, or God who showed obvious disdain for debt. Beverly Sills had it right when she said, "There is no shortcut to any place worth going." I have found that if you look into the lives of the kind of people you want to be like, you will find common themes. If you want to be skinny, study skinny people. If you want to be rich, do what lots of rich people do. The Forbes 400 is a list of the richest 400 people in America as rated by Forbes magazine. When surveyed, 75% of the Forbes 400, rich people, not your broke brother-in-law with an opinion, said the best way to build wealth is to become and stay debt-free. Walgreens, Cisco, Microsoft, and Harley-Davidson are run debt-free. I've met with thousands of millionaires in my years as a financial counselor, and they all lived on less than they made and spent only when they had cash. No payments. History also teaches us that debt wasn't always a way of life. In fact, 3 of the biggest lenders today were founded by people who hated debt. In 1910, the Sears catalog stated, "Buying on credit is folly." JCPenney department stores make millions annually on their plastic, but their founder was nicknamed James Cash Penny because he detested the use of debt. Henry Ford thought debt was a lazy man's method to purchase items. The old school saw the folly of debt. The new school saw the opportunity to take advantage of the consumer with debt. You have probably heard a lot of the sub-myths which fall in line behind the big one that says debt is a tool. So that we leave no stone unturned, let's review and debunk each of the myths spread by a culture that has officially bought the lie. Myth: if I loan money to a friend or relative, I am helping them. Truth: if I loan money to a friend or relative, the relationship will be strained or destroyed. The only relationship that would be enhanced is the kind resulting from one party's being the master and the other party a servant. The old joke is that if you loan your brother-in-law $100 and he never speaks to you again, was it worth the investment? We have all experienced loaning someone money and finding an immediate distancing in the relationship. Joan called my radio show one day complaining about how a loan had ruined her relationship with one of her best friends at work. She had loaned the lady, a broke single mom, $50 until payday. What I needed was for people to be impressed with my success. What I needed was family raising an eyebrow of approval based on my ability to win. What I yearned for was respect. What I was so shallow to believe was that the car I drove gave me those things. God used the whole story of what I drove to give my heart a total money makeover in the area of peer pressure. As I was going broke, losing everything, I kept the Jaguar by refinancing it repeatedly. I even went so far as to get a good friend to co-sign a loan so I could keep this image car. Within the year of our bankruptcy, we were so broke that our electricity was once cut off for 2 days. I have often wondered what the guy from the electric company thought as he stood in the driveway next to my Jaguar and pulled my electric meter. That is sick. Finally, my friend really got tired of making the payments he had co-signed for and gently suggested that I sell my precious car. I was mad at him. How dare he suggest I sell my car? So he quit making the payments. And the bank not so gently suggested I sell the car or they would repo it. I tried to stall and only came to my senses and sold the Jaguar on a Thursday morning because the bank assured me they would take it on Friday. I was able to work my way through the mess, pay the bank and even my friend back, but the process was humiliating because I was too stubborn to address what that car represented in my life. I caused much damage that was avoidable. An interesting footnote about how healing can occur on your weak spot. I was so disgusted with myself when I woke up and realized the depth of my stupidity that I swore off my drug, cars. I didn't care what we drove or what it looked like as long as we were winning in our total money makeover. Fast forward 15 years. We had become wealthy again, and I decided to get a different car. I'm always looking for a 1 or 2 year old car, and I'm always paying cash, and always looking for a great deal, not really caring which car it is. I was kind of looking for a Mercedes or a Lexus. A friend in the car business called me with a deal on a Jaguar. So all those years and tears later, when it was no longer the driving force of my approval rating, God sent a Jaguar back into my life. He returned what the locusts had eaten. But he only did so when it was not my idol. Rumor has it that God doesn't like us to have other gods in our lives. So, maybe someday, Sarah and Bob will be able to pay cash to take Sarah's whole family on a cruise for Christmas. After their total money makeover, Bob and Sarah will be able to pay cash for a huge event like that and not even dent their wealth. 4% have saved less than $1,000, and 25% have saved between $1,000 and $10,000. That means 68% have saved nothing or close to nothing. On the other hand, by the time you get here in the baby steps, you'll have a strong foundation and money to save. If you don't have children, or your kids are grown and gone, you will simply skip this step. For everyone else, a college fund is a necessity. College tuition goes up faster than regular inflation. Inflation of goods and services averages about 4% per year, while tuition inflation averages about 7% per year. When you save for college, you have to make at least 7% a year to keep up with the increases. Baby life insurance, like Gerber, or other whole life for babies to save for college is a joke, averaging less than 2% return. Savings bonds won't work either. Sorry, Grandma, because they average about 5%. Most states now offer prepaid college tuition, but remember that when you prepay anything, you simply break even with inflation. If tuition goes up 7% a year and you prepay it, you make 7% on your money. That is not too bad, but keep in mind that a decent growth stock mutual fund will average over 12% when invested long term. Let's do baby step 5 the right way. I suggest funding college, or at least the first step of college, with an educational savings account, ESA, funded in a growth stock mutual fund. The educational savings account, nicknamed the Education IRA, grows tax-free when used for higher education. If you invest $2,000 a year from birth to age 18 in prepaid tuition, that would purchase about $72,000 in tuition. But through an ESA in mutual funds averaging 12%, you would have $126,000 tax-free. The ESA currently allows you to invest $2,000 per year per child if your household income is under $200,000 per year. If you start investing early, your child can go to virtually any college if you save $166.67 per month, $2,000 per year. For most of you, Baby Step 5 is handled if you start an ESA fully funded and your child is under 8. If your children are older, or you have aspirations of expensive schools, graduate schools, or PhD programs, you will have to save more than the ESA will allow. I would still start with the ESA if the income limits don't keep you out. What if you have only a couple of years and will not be able to save much because you started your total money makeover late in life? They will be able to buy that cruise in memory of that fateful Thanksgiving when Sarah's heart had a total money makeover in her need for her family's approval. That change has taught Sarah and Bob that if they will live like no one else, later, they'll be able to live like no one else. One thing I have learned as I have lost fat, become toned, and generally gotten into better shape is this. Things that require physical output are easier for me. Things like mountain climbing or obstacle courses are actually doable now, not a dream as they were when I was overweight and out of shape. The same is true of our total money makeover journey to fiscal fitness. Have you realized by now that the start of your total money makeover is almost an obstacle course? We busted through denial. We waded through and climbed over debt myths. We carefully scaled the wall of money myths. We are working through ignorance. And we have learned not to place so much emphasis on our competition on the course. We've permanently quit keeping up with the Joneses because the Joneses are broke. The obstacle course, however, was only part of our journey. Now we stand at the bottom of a mountain with a clear view of the top. Take a look back before we start. The climb will be hard, but it will be near impossible if you are still struggling with any of the obstacles. The 12-steppers have it right. They say, continuing to do the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result is the definition of insanity. What you have falsely believed and acted on, or not acted on, has brought you to the place you are today with your money. If you want to be in a different place, you must believe and do things differently. The change will be painful, but the result will be worth it. I've been to the top of the total money makeover mountain, and I've led countless others there. I say it is worth the effort. So lace up your shoes of resolve, wave goodbye to your normal friends, and let's climb. Chapter 6. Save $1,000 fast. Walk before you run. In my first book, Financial Peace, there is a chapter titled Baby Steps, the premise of which is that we can do anything financially if we do it one little step at a time. The term Baby Steps comes from the comedy What About Bob, starring Bill Murray. Bill plays a crazy guy who drives his psychiatrist crazy. The therapist has written a book called Baby Steps. The statement, you can get anywhere if you simply go one step at a time, is the framework for the movie. We will use the baby steps to walk through our total money makeover. Why do baby steps work? I thought you'd never ask. The way you eat an elephant is one bite at a time. Payday came and went, and her friend, someone she used to talk to at lunch every day, someone who was her confidant and sounding board, now avoided her. Shame and guilt had entered the scene with no provocation. We don't control how debt affects relationships. Debt does that independently of what we want. The borrower is servant to the lender. You change the spiritual dynamic of a relationship when you loan a loved one money. They are no longer friend, uncle, or child. They are now your servant. I know some of you think that is overstated, but tell me why Thanksgiving dinner tastes different when a loan has been served. Eating with your master is different from eating with your family. Joan was really torn up about losing this friendship. I asked her if the friendship was worth $50. She gushed that it was worth many times that, so I told her to call her friend and tell her the debt was forgiven. A gift. The forgiveness of the debt helped her remove the master-servant dynamic from the relationship. Of course, it would be better if that dynamic had never entered the scene. I also suggested two stipulations to the forgiveness of the debt. First, that the friend agree to help someone else in need someday. And second, that she never loan friends money. Let's break the myth chain. The lesson is that while it is fine to give money to a friend in need if you have it, loaning them money will mess up the relationship. I have dealt with hundreds of strained and destroyed families where well-meaning people loaned money to help. Parents loan the 25-year-old newly married couple the down payment money for the first home. It all seems so noble and nice until the daughter-in-law catches the disapproving glances at the mention of the couple's upcoming vacation. She knows the meaning of the glances, that she should check with those well-meaning, noble parents-in-law before she buys toilet paper until this loan is repaid. A lifetime of resentment can be born right there. Hundreds of times I've seen relationships strained and sometimes destroyed. We all have, but we continue to believe the myth that a loan to a loved one is a blessing. It isn't. It is a curse. Don't put that burden on any relationship you care about. Myth. By co-signing a loan, I'm helping a friend or relative. Truth. Be ready to repay the loan. The bank wanted a co-signer for a reason, which is that they don't expect the friend or relative to pay. Think with me for a moment. Find something to do and do that with vigor until it is complete. Then and only then do you move to the next step. If you try to do everything at once, you will fail. When I went on a quest for a better body and better health a few years ago, my wise trainer didn't try to kill me the first day. We walked before we ran. Plus, if I had tried to do everything at once, I would have been overwhelmed and frustrated with my inability to do it at all. The power of focus is what causes our baby steps to work. When you try to do everything at once, progress can be very slow. When you put 3% in your 401k, $50 extra on the house payment, and $5 extra on the credit card, you dilute your efforts. Because you attack several areas at once, you don't finish anything. You start for a long time, and that makes you feel that you aren't accomplishing anything, which is very dangerous. If you feel that nothing is getting done, you will soon lose energy for the task of money management altogether. The power of focus is that it works. You check stuff off your list. The power of priority also causes the baby steps to work. Each of these steps is part of the proven plan to financial fitness I promised you. They build on one another. So do the baby steps in order. To start the baby steps, we will work on one important step to the exclusion of others. Patience. We will climb the whole mountain, but not until we first have a strong base camp. You will be tempted to short-circuit the process because you are more concerned about one certain area of your money, but don't do it. These steps are the proven plan to financial fitness, and they are in the right order for everyone. For example, if you are 55 with no retirement, you may want to jump ahead to step 4, invest 15% of your income into retirement, because you are scared about not being able to retire with dignity. The paradox is that by shortcutting the process, you are much more likely to fail at retiring with dignity. If you have kids heading toward college, you may be panicking about saving for college, which is covered in Baby Step 5, but don't do it out of order. Focus exclusively on the baby step you are on, even though it seems to be a temporary detriment to other areas of money. Things will be fine if you don't focus on retirement for a few months, as long as you can kick retirement into the stratosphere when we get there. Before we discuss the baby steps, we need to look at some basic tools needed to win and some ongoing things you should be doing as you go. The dreaded B word enters the picture here. You must set up a written budget every month. This is an audiobook about a process that will enable you to win with your money. And I assure you that virtually none of the thousands of winners I have seen did so without a written budget. If debt is the most aggressively marketed product in our culture today and the lending industry has denied your friend or relative a loan, there is little doubt that the potential borrower is trouble looking for a place to happen. The lender requires a cosigner because there is a very high statistical chance that the applicant won't pay. So why do we cosign knowing full well the inherent problems? We enter this ridiculous situation only on emotion. Intellect could not take us on this ride. We know they will pay because we know them. Wrong. The sad thing is that those of us who have co-signed loans know how they end up. We end up paying them, but only after our credit is damaged or ruined. According to Proverbs 17:18, it's stupid to guarantee someone else's loan. That pretty well sums it up. Just like trying to bless a loved one with a loan, many people are trying to help by co-signing, and the result is damaged credit and damaged or destroyed relationships. I see cases of people caught in the co-signing trap every day on the Dave Ramsey Show, our talk radio show. Joe called because he was surprised to find he was on the hook for $16,000 on a mobile home he co-signed for 15 years ago. 10 years ago, his brother's mobile home was repoed and the bank sold it for $16,000 less than was owed. Now, 10 years later, the bank caught up with Joe and wanted its money. Joe was angry that this could happen. Most cosigners have no concept of the trip they've signed up for. Myth. Cash advance, payday loans, rent-to-own, title pawning, and tote-the-note car lots are needed to help lower-income people get ahead. Truth. These rip-off examples of predatory lending are designed to take advantage of lower-income people and benefit only the owners of the companies making the loans. Lower-income people will remain at the bottom of the socioeconomic ladder if they fall for these rip-offs. These lenders, or as I like to call them, the scum of the scum, are bottom feeders and legally making themselves rich on the backs of the poor or those soon to be poor. The lending rates of these types of operations are over 100% interest, and if you want to stay on the bottom, keep dealing with these guys. You know why these types of operations are located only at the poor end of town? Because rich people won't play. That's how they got to be rich people. The payday loan is one of the fastest growing trash lenders out there. You write a hot check for $225, dated 1 week from now, which will be payday. First, plan on your child attending somewhere that is cheaper, living on campus and eating cafeteria food. You must get creative and resourceful. Look into companies that have work-study programs. Many companies offer to pay for school and have struck tuition deals with local colleges to attract the labor force. UPS, for instance, has a program in many cities where you can work 20 hours per week sorting boxes at night, and they will pay your tuition for school during the day. The military isn't for everyone, but a young man who used to work for me got a free college education by serving 4 years in the Army. If full-time military service isn't for you, check out the National Guard. Take a high-rejection, high-paying summer sales job. There are countless stories of young people selling books or participating in similar programs to get through school. Some of these young guerrilla combat salespeople get more of an education in the summer trenches than they do in marketing class. A friend of mine made $40,000 selling in one summer. If you already have the student loans or don't want to get a loan in the first place, look into the underserved areas programs. The government will pay for school or pay off your student loans if you will go to work in an underserved area. These areas are typically rural or inner city areas. Most of these programs are for law or medicine. Probably my favorite method of funding school, other than saving for it, is unclaimed scholarships. There is more than $4 billion in unclaimed scholarship money every year. These scholarships are not academic or athletic scholarships either. They are of small to medium-sized dollar amounts from organizations like community clubs. The Rotary Club, the Lions Club, or the JCs many times have $250 or $500 per year they award to some good young citizen. The lists of these scholarships can be bought online, and there are even a few software programs you can purchase. Denise, a listener to my show, took my advice, bought one of the software programs, and worked the system. She spent the whole summer filling out applications and writing essays. She literally applied for 1,000 scholarships. Denise was turned down by 970, but she got 30, and those 30 scholarships paid her $38,000. She went to school for free, while her next-door neighbor sat and whined that no money was available for school and eventually got a student loan. If you walk your way up these baby steps, you can send your kids to school without debt. Even if you start late, perseverance and resourcefulness can get them through school. Chapter 11. Pay off the home mortgage. Be ultra fit. I have a good friend who runs marathons. As you reach baby step 6, they will give you $200 cash on the spot, all for a mere $25 service charge, which equates to over 650% interest annually. Mike called my talk show recently and was caught in a web of these payday loans. Basically, Mike had borrowed from one trash lender to pay another, and by doing this again and again and again, had created a cycle of financial death. He was panicked because he was being threatened with criminal charges for writing bad checks by the very places that have a business model based on a post-dated bad check. This type of business is legalized loan sharking. The sad thing is that the only way out for Mike is to stop paying them, close his accounts, and then meet with each lender to work out a payment arrangement. That will mean extra jobs and selling things around the house. The classic tote-the-note car lot is no better. Most of these transactions involve older, cheaper cars. The dealer purchases these cars and sells them for a down payment equal to what he paid for the car. So the payments at 18 to 38% interest paid weekly are all gravy. Tow trucks all over town recognize these cars because the car being sold has been sold many times and repeatedly repoed by the dealer. Every time the dealer sells the car, his return on investment skyrockets. The payments could have purchased the car for cash in a matter of weeks. In fact, the down payment could have purchased the car if the buyer had been a little more savvy. Rent to own is one of the worst examples of the little red-faced kid in I want it now mode. The Federal Trade Commission continues to investigate this industry because the effective interest rates in rent-to-own transactions are over 1,800% on average. Whoa! People rent items they can't possibly afford to buy because they look only at how much a week and think, I can afford this. Well, when you look at the numbers, no one can afford this. The average washer and dryer will cost you just $20 per week for 90 weeks. That is a total of $1,800 for a washer and dryer. As my old professor used to say about the own part of rent to own, you should live so long. If you had saved $20 per week for just 10 weeks, you could have bought the scratch and dent model off the floor at the same rent to own store for $200. Or you could buy a used set out of the classifieds. If the red-faced kid, I want it and I want it now, rules your life, you will stay broke. If you use payday loans, tote the note, and rent to own, please understand that you are being destroyed financially. You reach marathoner status in the wealth-building world. You have run the good race, but you aren't done. Bruce, my marathon friend, tells me that at about the 18th mile mark, runners begin to lock up. The highly trained and conditioned body starts talking to you about stopping. Big black clouds of doubt enter the mentally tough and trained competitive mind. You begin to think things like, 18 miles is pretty good. Few others could accomplish that. if you aren't really careful, the good enough can become the enemy of the best. Bad is seldom the enemy of the best, but mediocrity with a dose of doubt can keep you from excellence. Finishing well can be more important than starting well. At this point in your total money makeover, you are debt-free except the house, and you have 3 to 6 months of expenses saved for emergencies. You are putting 15% of your income into retirement savings, and you are investing for your kids' college education. You are now one of the top 5 to 10% of Americans because you have some wealth, have a plan, and are under control. At this point in your total money makeover, you are in grave danger. You are in danger of settling for the good enough. You are at the 18-mile mark of a marathon, and now that it is time to reach for the really big gold ring, the final 2 baby steps could seem out of your reach. Let me assure you that many have seen this point. Some have stopped and regretted it. Others have stayed gazelle intense long enough to finish the race. The latter have looked and seen just one major hurdle left, after which they can walk with pride among the ultra-fit elite who have finished the total money makeover. Baby step 6, pay off your home mortgage. The final hurdle before you turn the corner for the last few miles is to become completely debt-free. No payments. I have said it before, and I will repeat myself until you hear me. If you invested what you pay in monthly payments, you'd be a debt-free millionaire before long. Every dollar in your budget that you can find above living, retirement, and college should be used to make extra payments on your home. Attack that home mortgage with gazelle intensity. Anytime I speak about paying off mortgages, people give me that special look. They think I'm crazy. Most people believe all the mortgage myths. Yes, we must dispel a few more myths. There are 2 really big, quote, reasons that keep seemingly intelligent people, like me for years, from paying off mortgages. You have to tell your money what to do or it leaves. A written budget for the month is your goal. People who win at anything have written goals. Goals are what you are aiming at. Zig Ziglar says, if you aim at nothing, you will hit it every time. You wouldn't build a house without a blueprint, so why do you spend your lifetime income of over $2 million without a blueprint? Jesus said, which of you intending to build a tower does not sit down first and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it? Brian Tracy, motivational speaker, says, what does it take to succeed on a big scale? A tremendous God-given talent? Inherited wealth? A decade of postgraduate education? Connections? Fortunately for most of us, what it takes is something very simple and accessible. Clear, written goals. According to Brian Tracy, a study of Harvard graduates found that after 2 years, the 3% who had written goals achieved more financially than the other 97% combined. This is not a textbook on money, but let me give you a couple of guidelines to get started on budgeting. Set up a new budget every month. Don't try to have the perfect budget for the perfect month, because we never have those. Spend every dollar on paper before the month begins. Income minus outgo equals exactly zero every month. Look at this month's income and this month's bills, savings, and debts, and match them up until you've given every dollar an outgo name. If you're married, agree on the budget with your spouse. This one sentence requires a standalone book to describe how. But the bottom line is this. If you aren't working together, it is almost impossible to win. In most marriages, one person is more forceful than the other. If the forceful one is stupid, guess what happens? A lot of stupid decisions are made for the family. I put out a call right now for those of you who are not the forceful ones in marriages to speak out when they think a decision is wrong. Do not go along with stupidity. If you know what is right, grow a backbone and speak up. You need to learn to bust up in your spouse's face and say no to stupid decisions. When you are right, you shouldn't go walking around afraid of what your spouse is going to think or feel. You don't have to be nasty, but you do have to be assertive. The first time you do this, there will likely be a fight. You may need some counseling, but you needed it anyway. One wife wrote to me because she was fed up with her husband's behavior. Quote, I need you to help me set some guidelines. My husband refuses to work with me on our quest for financial independence. I've set up numerous appointments for financial counseling, and he has blown off each one of them. Should I go about this on my own and try to secure my own checking account and at least get myself into good financial standing and worry about my own retirement? These businesses feed on the working poor, and you must avoid them at all costs if you want to win with money. Myth: 90 days, same as cash, equals using other people's money for free. Truth: 90 days is not the same as cash. The silly marketing that America falls for has resulted in this. We buy things we don't need with money we don't have in order to impress people we don't really like. 90 days, same as cash, has exploded in furniture, electronics, and appliance sales. 90 days is not the same as cash for these three basic reasons. One, if you will flash cash, $100 bills, in front of a manager who has a sales quota to meet, you will likely get a discount. If you can't get a discount, go to the competitor and get one. You do not get the discount when you sign up for the finance plan. Two, most people don't pay off the debt in the allotted time. Nationally, 88% of these contracts convert to debt, a debt where you are charged a rip-off interest rate of 24 to 38%, and they backcharge you to the date of purchase. Please don't tell me you are the one who's actually going to pay it off. No, Virginia, 90 days is not the same as cash. Myth: car payments are a way of life. You'll always have one. Truth: staying away from car payments by driving reliable used cars is what the average millionaire does. That is how he or she became a millionaire. Taking on a car payment is one of the dumbest things people do to destroy their chances of building wealth. The car payment is most folks' largest payment except for their home mortgage, so it steals more money from the income than virtually anything else. USA Today notes that the average car payment is $378 over 55 months. Most people get a car payment and keep it throughout their lives. As soon as a car is paid off, they get another payment because they need a new car. If you keep a $378 car payment throughout your life, which is normal, you miss the opportunity to save that money. If you invested $378 per month from age 25 to age 65, a normal working lifetime, in the average mutual fund, averaging 12%, the 70-year stock market average, you would have $4,447,084 and a penny at age 65. Hope you like the car! Some of you had your nose in the air as intellectual snobs when I illustrated how bad rent-to-own is because you would never enter such an establishment, and yet you're doing worse on your car deal. My response to her: you should not separate your finances unless you're planning to get divorced. I think that you need to look at the problems within your marriage before you look at your financial problems. Once you and your husband can agree on marriage issues, the rest will fall into place. Honestly, your marriage is normal based on the fact that most people go through this type of situation and disagreement. But if your husband continues to refuse to go to counseling, you need to go to a counselor alone and try to make this marriage work. Once the budget is agreed on and is in writing, pinky swear and spit shake that you will never do anything with money that is not on that paper. If something comes up in the middle of the month that causes the budget to need changing, call an emergency budget committee meeting. You can change the budget only if you do two things. One, both spouses agree to the change. Two, you must still balance your budget. If you increase what you are spending on car repairs by $50, you must lower what you're spending somewhere else by $50 so that your income minus your outgo still equals zero. Before we get to baby step one, you will have to do one other thing. You will have to be current with all of your creditors. If you are behind on payments, The first goal will be to become current. If you are far behind, do necessities first, which are basic food, shelter, utilities, clothing, and transportation. Only when you're current with the necessities can you catch up on credit cards and student loans. If you need more help with this level of financial crisis, check our website for how to contact one of our certified counselors or order the book Financial Peace Revisited. Focused intensity is required to win. I can't stress enough that people who have had a total money makeover got mad. They got sick and tired of being sick and tired. They said, "I've had it," and went ballistic to change their lives. There is no intellectual exercise where you can academically work your way into wealth. You have to get fired up. Play the music from Rocky in the background and go get them, champ. There is no energy in logic. This is behavior and motivation modification, and it works. After you are current, have a written, agreed-on plan, have the obstacle course behind you, and are focused and intense, you are ready to follow the right priorities. Here we go. Baby step one. Save $1,000 cash as a starter emergency fund. It is going to rain. You need a rainy day fund. Money Magazine says that 78% of us will have a major negative event in a given 10-year period of time. So we will start with those. Big reason number one, myth. It is wise to keep my home mortgage to get the tax deduction. Truth, tax deductions are no bargain. We discussed tax deduction math when we looked at car fleeces. Let's review. If you have a home with a payment of around $900 and the interest portion is $830 per month, you have paid around $10,000 in interest that year, which creates a tax deduction. If instead you have a debt-free home, you would in fact lose the tax deduction. So the myth says, keep your home mortgage because of tax advantages. This situation is one more opportunity to discover if your CPA can add. If you do not have a $10,000 tax deduction and you are in a 30% bracket, you will have to pay $3,000 in taxes on that $10,000. According to the myth, we should send $10,000 in interest to the bank so we don't have to send $3,000 in taxes to the IRS. Personally, I think I will live debt-free and not make a $10,000 trade for $3,000. However, any of you who want $3,000 of your taxes paid, just email me and I will personally pay $3,000 of your taxes as soon as your check for $10,000 clears into my bank account. I can add. Big reason number two, myth. It is wise to borrow all I can on my home or continually refinance for cash out because of the great interest rates and then invest the money. Truth, you don't really make anything when the smoke clears. This one is a little complicated, but if you follow me, you will have intellectually grasped why so many people have fallen into a financial pit. The myth that I was taught in academia is to use lower interest debt to invest in higher return investments. Sadly, some, quote, financial planners have told Americans to borrow on their home at around 8% to invest in good growth stock mutual funds, averaging 12%, because you make an easy 4% spread. Mutual funds are awesome investments, and as I have said, I personally have tons of money invested in good growth stock mutual funds. The problem with this myth is that the assumption used to get that 4% spread or profit on investing is wrong. Let's look at borrowing $100,000 on your home to invest. If you borrowed at 8%, you would pay $8,000 in interest. And if you invested the $100,000 you borrowed on your home and made 12%, you would make $12,000 in return, netting you $4,000. Or would you? The job is downsized, or you just plain get fired. There is an unexpected pregnancy, Car blows up, transmission goes out, you bury a loved one, grown kids move home again. Life happens, so be ready. This is not a surprise. You need an emergency fund, an old-fashioned grandma's rainy day fund. Sometimes people tell me I should be more positive. Well, I